I'll call on Elder Adam Massager. He's gonna come and break forth Yahweh's word.
Let's humble our hearts before Almighty Yahweh. Father in heaven, as we come before you on the Sabbath day to honor you, worship you, and learn more about the way that you have shown your people, we pray that what we would do this Sabbath would be pleasing to you and that your guidance would be here among us through the power of your Spirit. Open up our hearts and our minds. And what we might learn today would be a blessing for us and that we might understand you in greater ways so that each of us can be a light to the world and have a ready answer for the truth that is within us. And now we thank you for guiding us and for protecting us, and be with us the rest of this day as we strive to walk in that pathway that is the only pathway that leads to salvation through Yahshua the Messiah. In his name we pray. Hallelujah. You may be seated. Well, here we are entering that season, as they say. I overheard a man not too long ago asked by another person, "Are you ready for Halloween?" "No," he responded. "Actually, we shut off the lights upstairs, we go to the basement, and we wait it out." "What on earth for?" he was asked. He said, "Because my Christian faith does not allow me to participate in it." You don't hear that too often today. "But there's nothing wrong with it," the person stubbornly insisted. "It's sanctioned by the church. It's a church observance." The person happened, of course, to be Roman Catholic. "Church sanctioned? Okay, but scriptural? There's a difference there, isn't there? We'll see about that." As America becomes more secular, Halloween has replaced Easter as number two in the lineup of most popular holidays. And Thanksgiving, which, of course, as we all know, has purely religious overtones, is completely lost in the mix, in the insane rush to the Xmas super holiday. So big has the season of Noel become that our very economy can make or break on it. Sometimes some merchants actually get half their profits from this time of year, for the whole year. Well, Halloween is not only the most profane, but it is now more morbid and sinister than ever. People argue, "But you can't take it away from the children. How can you deprive them of that much fun?" Well, we all enjoy fun. Nobody's against fun. But not all fun is innocent fun. Some fun is just a facade, hiding something a lot more sinister. And I want to look at that today as well. You ever notice there aren't any blessings in man's holidays? We come away from the Feast of Tabernacles, we're rejuvenated, we feel good and blessed. People come away from these holidays and they complain, "Oh man, it all went wrong. You know, we didn't have any fun. The relatives were all in a grumpy mood, and you know, within a few minutes it's all over. We opened up all the gifts and it's all gone. And you know, then we have to work toward next year and build it all up again because there's no fun in this one." Well, if you ever look beneath the surface of the strangest of all observances that we call Halloween, you'll be probably surprised. You know, it's a basic principle that the origin of something determines its nature. You can take an already rotten board, and you can paint it up all real nice, put ribbons and bows on it, but you still have a piece of rotten wood, don't you? It's still rotten to the core, and the only thing to do with it is to burn it up. It has no real value. And in essence, that's what we're looking at when we look at this perverse holiday of Halloween. It's an observance that's been baptized by the Roman Church and made to appear consecrated by that body, but its rottenness is obvious. Just look at it and look how it's observed. It has no useful purpose except to make retailers rich. Paul warns over in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And the reason I'm giving this message today is that you'll have a ready answer if someone asks you, "Well, why aren't you out there running from door to door if you're a child, getting some tricks or getting some treats, I should say, or involved in some tricks?" In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, Paul warns us. He says, "Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. So evil things can be made to look pretty good, just as Satan, no doubt, looked pretty good to Eve when she was deceived. He's a counterfeiter par excellence. And that means he can make out so many bad things look good, make a perversion look good, or at least fun, and a falsehood look like truth. So what about this holiday? If someone were to question you, what reasons would you give that you don't observe it? And when they come back with, you know, it's really just innocent fun, what would you say? If you could give them a good, solid scriptural reason why it's incompatible with the walk of a true worshiper. Well, we have to know the basics, first of all, the history behind this holiday to understand why we do what we do and shun the observance of it. You look back into history, you find that there are four historical streams that came together to create this holiday through the centuries to form what we now know as Halloween. So I want to briefly look at each of these roots. The first stream goes back even before the time of Yahshua the Messiah to Western Europe and to a people known as the Celts. These were a warlike, thoroughly pagan people who worshipped many, many deities. And that's almost the pattern you see all the way through history is multiple deities. And that's what set Israel off because they only worshipped one mighty one. And that was unheard of. That was completely new to most of all the rest of the world. Well, these were warlike people. They were known as the Gauls by the Romans. And incidentally, these Gauls migrated to what became known as Galatia or Galatia. And that's what Paul was battling, their ideas and their beliefs, when he gives us the book of Galatians and says, for instance, in chapter 4, he says, and people confuse this with the truth, they think that he's talking about Yahweh's days, when he says, you observe days in verse 10 and months and times and years, I'm afraid of you, lest I bestowed upon you labor in vain. He said, back up in verse 8, howbeit then, when you knew not Elohim, they didn't know Yahweh, you did service unto them which by nature are no mighty ones. Just like in this observance called Halloween, there's no mighty one in it other than the evil one. And then he says, but now that you have known Elohim, or rather are known of Elohim, how turn you again to the weak and beggarly alms? These Galatians, people from Gaul, these pagan people, had been converted. Now they want to go back to it again. So when people say verse 10 talks about feast days, just point them back up to verse 8 and read down through verse 9 and say, no, that's not what it's talking about. But if you understand history, it becomes quite clear. So it's an observance that has been really drawn from a lot of pagan sources. These Galatians were part of the one stream of paganism from which gave us this day. He says, don't go back to your previous worthless paganism. Okay, back to the history of Halloween. Even though these Celts were ruled by various kings, their real power was derived into their priestly caste called the Druids. The Druids. They were a secret, bloodthirsty, priestly society who ruled by terror and sorcery and witchcraft. Even the many of the Celtic kings were afraid of them because of their black powers. The most important religious day for the Druids was a celebration that we spell Samhain, but it's really pronounced Samhain, Lord of the Dead. They honored Satan. Basically, they were Satanists. So now we come down to the holiday. The Celtic New Year began November 1st. November 1st. The night before, of course, is October 31st. It was the night to reverence Samhain, the god of the dead, Hasatan. And it was the time when, in the year when the leaves were falling, the days were getting shorter, it was getting darker, they were getting colder, vegetation was dying, the green leaves, you know, and the colors come out. Very appropriate time for these people of Northern Europe who wanted to celebrate their Lord of the Dead. So that's the time they did it. They believed that on the night of October 31st, the spirit world came closest contact with the human world of any other time of the year. And on this night, they believed that disembodied spirits of all those who had died during the year would come back looking for a new person to inhabit. And if they didn't, they would perish. So they're looking for a living body to possess for the next year. And it was believed to be the spirit's only hope of an afterlife, to find this person. So it was a scary time, very scary. And if food and shelter and provision were given them, they'd be satisfied and they'd leave. If not, these evil spirits could cast spells and wreak havoc on both man and beast, and generally just bring torment to the living. If the proper treat was not there, they would trick people, and they'd respond with something evil. Of course, this is the custom that we get today, trick or treat. Now, remember, these people were very superstitious. This was serious stuff. This isn't just something, you know, fun for kids. To defend themselves, they'd seek to fool these wicked spirits. They'd dress up and masquerade as evil spirits themselves, witches, ghosts, goblins, all of that, so that they would trick them and they wouldn't inhabit their bodies. So today, Tommy, with no clue as to why, he grabs his bag, puts on his mask and his black outfit, and goes from door to door saying trick or treat, who has no clue why he's doing it. His parents don't understand it. They just have him do it because they did it and everybody else is doing it. Has no clue that this is something he's perpetuating anciently, thousands of years ago. The perverted climax of this dark night was animal and human sacrifice to placate the Lord of the Dead. What they would do is normally take a prisoner, a robber, a thief, and sacrifice him, carried out by the priestly druids, who would rip their hearts out and take the blood and use it for religious rites. They'd also use the entrails and other body parts to divine the future. They were really big into fortune telling. Really big into it. And then they'd take the remains and they'd burn them in what they call bone fires. You know, the body, the bones, burn it all up, where we get the word bonfire from that. So this was a time of great apprehension. Many dangers lurked out there, at least in their minds. And during this time, the ancients believed that their crops were in jeopardy. Babies could be stolen. Farm animals could be killed. Food and milk spoiled, all because of the open doorway to the evil spirits that were lurking. It was a very frightening time. Well, as we can see, much of today's current Halloween practices have their roots in this ancient pagan Celtic religion. Even though they were eventually conquered, their pagan practices were never rooted out of Western Europe. Many of their rites survive in the Xmas celebration. But that, of course, is another message. When our Puritan ancestors came to America, of course, they were too biblically oriented to ever fall for an observance like this. So they knew that all forms of the occult were strictly forbidden in the scriptures and that it was an abomination to keep it. And really, this country never really got into it until around 1900. So, it really started to grow when the ancestors, the people who, the descendants, I should say, of the Celts, came to this country from Ireland and Western Europe, particularly during the potato famine in the 19th centuries, when they came in droves and perpetuated again this holiday and all the other things that they did. And it took root. That is one of the streams, one of the tributaries that feeds this river of Halloween, let's say. The second starts with the ancient Romans. Besides the Celts, the Romans, along with many other ancient people, celebrated harvest time in the fall of the year. It's a natural time. I mean, Yahweh gives us command to celebrate it at that time. And their festival was in honor of Pomona, the fruit goddess. This is where we get apples. Apple bobbing in Halloween, you know, that part of that comes from that. And that's why they're prominent. Now remember that although society may die, beliefs and practices have a tendency to just take a life of their own and live on forever, embraced by the next generation of conquering peoples. And that's why Yahweh warns in Jeremiah chapter 2, learn not the way of the heathen. Learn not their ways. He knows what could happen. He knows that when people start to investigate and want to learn more, Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 2, thus says Yahweh, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. We're talking about druids looking at body parts and discerning the future, perhaps, prognosticating. For the customs of the people are vain. For one cuts a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands, the workmen with axe, they deck it with silver and gold, fasten it with nails, with hammers, that it move not. The druids were great into worshiping in groves of oak trees, and they really loved the aphrodisiacs, things like that, and mistletoe was great. They loved that too. And they'd cut these trees out and fashion them into pagan idols and so forth. Yahweh says, don't learn of it. Don't. There's nothing in it. It's empty, and it's going to cause nothing but trouble. So don't learn these ways. But man likes to keep alive traditions. He likes to do what the others are doing. We in our natural state are drawn to evilness and sin. It comes naturally as human beings. We've got to fight it. We've got to overcome it. We've got to learn Yahweh's ways, and that's what we're trying to do here, and it's not easy. Sometimes it takes effort. Sometimes it takes a lot of blood, toil, tears, and sweat. Over in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9, he says, the heart is deceitful above all things. He's talking about the carnal human being. And desperately wicked, who can know it? I, Yahweh, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. So, which way are people naturally going to go? They're going to go this way, the scriptures, or are they going to go the natural way? Which way? That's right. We know which way. That's why you find a few thousand keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, and you find a few billion keeping Halloween. Well, the Roman general Agrippa first built a pantheon, a temple for all their gods. Again, many, many multi-deity worship in the year 27 before our common era. And it was rebuilt by the Roman Emperor Hadrian in about the year 100 and dedicated it primarily to Cybele, the goddess of nature. Since it was a pantheon, pan, theos, all gods, structure, many other deities were also worshipped there. The pantheon became the principal place of worship for the Romans and the place where they went to honor and pray for their dead. When Rome fell to the invading barbarian horde of Gauls, they overran the pantheon, these Gauls did, along with everything else. So it fell into disrepair. In the year 607, it was recaptured by the Emperor Phocas, who gave it as a gift to a pope, Pope Boniface IV. He gave this pagan Roman temple as a gift. Boniface, I guess, was thrilled. He reconsecrated it and dedicated it to the Virgin Mary. In other words, the Roman church baptized the pagan temple and then enlisted it into its own service. So from CE 609, the pantheon was used as a Christian church called the Santa Maria Rotunda. It was an easy transition from Cybele, the goddess of nature, to Mary, the mother of the Savior. Every May, a celebration was held there in the Pantheon to the Virgin Mary. This happened to a lot of once pagan edifices, once pagan structures. When they conquer people, they take them over and then dedicated them to their worship. The Romans did, and of course, eventually it became Christianized. Instead of tearing them down, like Yahweh says, remove those high places, tear them down. Yahweh commanded Israel. They just moved their own icons into them and said, okay, set up shop, here we are. We now have a structure of our own. When you do this, and Yahweh knew it, you're not separating beliefs. You're merging them. Maybe not all at once, but in a physical sense, you're merging them in the minds of people. A physical blurring was going on. And of course, we know it even became worse. And while the Roman church had sought to Christianize the culture, she more often had been enculturated by the pagan surroundings. And so today, Halloween-observing Christians fool themselves thinking they're saved by J.C. and yet celebrate with Satan. That's the ultimate result. This is the second stream that empties into the Halloween River, and it involves syncretism, a blending of beliefs, a blending of religions, the combining and merging of different religious distinctives into one universal religion. They don't call it universal, you know, Catholic for nothing. Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20 says, and he warns here, that you don't play around with evil. If it's evil, you take it for that. Chapter 5, verse 20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, and that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that do that. Skip down to verse 24. Therefore, as the fire devours the stubble and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness, and their blossom shall go up as dust. Notice, because they have cast away the law of Yahweh of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Woe unto them, he says, that do that. Are we going to say, oh, it's just innocent fun? Or are we going to perpetuate and keep this thing going year after year after year, century after century? You know, Halloween is one of the clearest examples of merging. The merging and uniting of different religious beliefs into a single observance that we have in this world today. And I want to show how it happened in a minute. Now, along comes the pagan Roman Emperor Constantine. He makes Catholicism the official state religion under his Edict of Milan in the year 313. During the Dark Ages, the Roman Church then sought to increase its influence over many of the pagans, and as it merged or went out into the world even more, and sometimes they were more successful than at other times. Many pagan superstitions and practices that the church had early sought to eradicate suddenly started to reappear in Europe during this time. Involvement in witchcraft started to grow again. Witchcraft, the third stream that feeds Halloween. One of the key rites of witchcraft was in the number of celebrations held each year called Witches' Sabbaths. The most important was known as the High Sabbath, or Black Sabbath, which occurred on, you guessed it, October 31st. It was generally a night of feasting and revelry. It was the feast that provided the many trappings of modern-day Halloween, like witches on broomsticks, black cats, skulls, pumpkins. So much of our Halloween folklore, so to speak, stems from this time and from this observance, this high witches' Sabbath that was celebrated in Europe during the Dark Ages. Some people believe that evil spirits could be warded off by carving a grotesque face in first they used turnips, but then it became pumpkins because it was easier to do. Put a candle in it because they felt that the witches and evil ones, you know, were afraid of fire. And, make a scary face on it. And create what they call a jack-o'-lantern or jack-of-the-lantern. Jack is just another ancient name of calling the evil one. It's actually Satan. Along with the scary face, and it became a weapon against evil influences. Put out in front of your home, you're protected. Witches use skulls on Halloween to communicate with the dead. It was also believed that they derived from black cats their power to invoke evil spirits. The Celts were particularly fearful of black cats because they thought the animals were originally humans that had been morphed into or reincarnated into animals, a cat, by sinister powers. So here we have another of the tributaries contributing to Halloween and all the trappings we get from that. This is a very complex thing when you start looking into it. And it just grew and grew like Topsy, you know, on and on, year after year, century after century, you get more and more and more, and pretty soon you have this crazy observance, all sorts of different weird things going on. And where did it all come from, you know? In the early Roman church, there was a movement to honor and reverence the lives of certain church leaders. I think the latest pope, I don't know if they ever sainthooded him. They were working on it. Maybe they haven't done it yet. But that's what they did. They started revering people. That's all part of the pantheon. Worship of multiple beings, you see. Multiple gods. Well, it's in essence part of that. So gradually, they put in a special category, these people called saints, the ones who had died. The Bible talks about saints as being living people, not dead people, but they honored the dead people. A saint was honored for each day of the year. The church father, Chrysostom, I always have a hard time pronouncing that, Chrysostom, tells us that as early as the 4th century, the Eastern Church celebrated a festival in honor of these saints. Well, gradually, there were more saints than they had days for. They ran out of days. Each saint had a day, and they got so many that the solution was to consolidate all of them into one special day called All Saints' Day. We worship all the saints on one day. In the year 705, Pope Gregory III changed the celebration of All Saints' Day to November 1st. In the year 834, Pope Gregory IV extended the celebration to the entire Roman Church. This was an apparent attempt to coincide with the ancient Druidic festival of Samhain. The church wanted to accommodate itself, of course, to the recently conquered German Saxons and Norsemen of Scandinavia. So they baptized that, merged it all into a single pagan celebration. You want to worship and keep Samhain? Well, you just switch over to our All Saints Day. You're basically doing the same thing. That's how they got them to commit. And to make it more palatable, they just switch symbols. The problem is, those original symbols survived to be incorporated into the new observance. They didn't clean anything up. They just made it more complicated. Well, anyway, this special church day of remembrance of all saints was called All Hallow Mass. You know, M-A-S on the end, like Christmas. That's by that you know it's got a Catholic tag on it. And it was then shortened to All Hallow for the hallowed ones, or the saints, they were being remembered. The night before, October 31st, evolved into All Hallow Evening. It too gradually was shortened to All Hallow Eve, and then Hallows In, and finally Halloween, shortening of the letters, cutting out some letters. So now we have Halloween, and I guess this is what that person meant by the observance the church made. Because the name, certainly, was church-made, but the observance is something else. So a day that started out as a remembrance of the saints progressed to a reverence of the saints and finally to worship of saints. It's nothing more than another pagan version of worshiping many gods. And remember, we have the pantheon to do it in. That's great. Well, there was an unholy wedding then of the saints and Samhain, a union of light and darkness, perhaps, a commingling of the cup of the master with the cup of demons. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and see what Yahweh says about this in verse 16. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 16. The cup of blessing, which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Messiah? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Messiah? For we, being many, are one bread and one body. For we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold, Israel, after the flesh, are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? If you're going to, you know, take part in the trappings of it, are you not observing it, is what he's saying. What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to Elohim. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. There's your answer right there. Why don't you keep Halloween? 1 Corinthians 10, verse 20. You cannot drink the cup of the master and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the master's table and the table of devils. Make a choice, one way or the other. Do we not provoke Yahweh to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? No, we certainly aren't. So now we have these four streams coming in and forming the polluted river called Halloween. The ultimate fountainhead, of course, of Halloween is HaSatan himself. He's given the true pagan nature of Halloween a benign cultural veneer, you might say, of innocent fun. Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just for the kids. It's just for one night. They go out and have fun and go around. And really, I guess they have no idea why, other than you get some free candy, maybe do a few things of mischief. Satan is the master of deceit and disguise. His favorite deception is to convince educated people that he himself doesn't even exist. That's his best deception. What better way to infiltrate minds and hearts through the biggest ruse that he himself doesn't even exist? I mean, he's made himself completely invisible, so to speak, in mind and in spirit and everything else. He's not there, so what's wrong with it? Well, if Yahweh's not there, I guess there's nothing wrong with it. Go ahead and have a ball, because it doesn't matter anyway. To put them in the same harmless category as fairy tales and make-believe. When Yahweh gave the promised land to the early Israelites, he clearly warned in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 19, I'm sorry, verse 9, against what we have just studied today. Deuteronomy 18, verse 9. Where he warns, when you are come into the land which Yahweh your Elohim gives you, you shall not learn to do after the abominations of these nations. Now, if the universal church had read this and took it to heart, we wouldn't be doing what we do in our culture today, next Monday night. I guess that's when it is, somewhere in there. Anyway. There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divination, or an observer of times, we're talking about astrology, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination unto Yahweh, and because of these abominations, Yahweh your Elohim does drive you out from before you. Drive them out before you. You shall be perfect with Yahweh your Elohim, for these nations which you shall possess hearkened unto observers of times. They had the Druids there and all the others, unto diviners. But as for you, Yahweh your Elohim has not suffered you so to do. You're going a different direction, he says. Don't go that way. Whenever the apostles encountered fortune-telling, witchcraft, and the occult, they rebuked it and they resisted it, didn't they? They didn't say, well, you know, you might have something there. Let's find out what you're doing, and maybe we can profit by it. Let's turn to Acts chapter 19, verse 13. Then certain of the vagabond Jews, exorcists, took upon them to call over them which had evil spirits the name of the master Yahshua, saying, we adjure you by Yahshua, whom Paul preached. What is he doing? What are they doing? They're giving their authority for doing this to Paul through Yahshua. Now there were seven sons of one Sceva, a Jew, and chief of the priests, which did so. Seven guys going out, pretending like they're going to throw out the evil spirits. And the evil spirit answered and said, Yahshua I know, and Shaul I know, but who are you? Who are you? What authority? And the man in whom the evil spirit was leaped on them and overcame them and prevailed against them, so they fled out of the house naked and wounded. One man, the power of an evil spirit, beat them up, all seven of them. And this was known to all the Jews and Greeks also dwelling at Ephesus, and fear fell on them all, and the name of the master Yahshua was magnified. And many that believed came and confessed and showed their deeds. They saw this, believe me, it got their attention really fast. And they confessed, yeah, they dabbled in it too. Witchcraft. Many of them also used curious arts. Who knows what that is? Practices. Strange. I guess the word means going beyond that which is legitimate in the Greek. Curious, and burned them before all men. They brought their books and their paraphernalia and burned it. And they counted the price of them, this is interesting, and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. So mightily grew the word of Elohim and prevailed. And so they got rid of it. The enterprising merchants of Ephesus had capitalized on the economic opportunities of the occult and the witchcraft, just as our contemporary businessmen do the same thing this time of year, and they exploited, just as they exploit Halloween into a multi-million-dollar annual bonanza. And so the masses drift along, letting society shape their personal beliefs and practices, not stopping to question anything, wondering, hey, should we really be doing that the world does, but blindly joins in and thinks it's strange when you do not join them, as the scripture tells us. Most have never looked into this. They've never looked at it, although it's in their newspaper usually every year, something about it. But they never tried to look into what Yahweh wants, what Yahweh thinks about it, and how they live their lives for Him. Halloween certainly is no exception. Can we mix light with darkness? Is that okay? Is it a little compromise with idolatry acceptable to a sovereign Elohim? Will he reward such behavior? Imagine Yahweh giving a passive nod as he sees all kinds of symbols appearing, witchcraft being glorified on Halloween. And imagine this in the light of Exodus 22:18. I want to look at that. Exodus 22:18. Oh, it's okay. It's just innocent fun. They'll get over it. Just one day I can look the other way. I can look the other way and it'll all be over. And the kids will be happy and everybody will be fine. And they can look forward to next year. Exodus 22:18. You shall not suffer a witch to live. That's what he thinks about witchcraft. Don't even deserve to live. Participating in the practices of such heathenism as one does in the observance of Halloween is expressly forbidden in the scriptures. Let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 12. Now look at verse 29, start there. When Yahweh your Elohim shall cut off the nations from before you, whither you go to possess them, and you succeedest them and dwell in their land. Okay, we're driving them out. We're going to live there now where they were. Take heed to yourself that you be not snared by following them after that they be destroyed from before you, and that you inquire not after their mighty ones. Don't look into it. Don't study it for the purpose of wanting to indulge in it, saying, how did these nations serve their deities? Even so will I do likewise. He says, don't do it. You shall not do so unto Yahweh your Elohim, for every abomination to Yahweh which he hates have they done unto their Elohim. For even their sons and their daughters have they burnt in the fire to their Elohims. What thing soever I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add, there is the key right here. You shall not add thereto, nor diminish from it. You're adding a dimension of worship you have no business messing with when you observe these things that the world does. That's what he's saying. You don't get into it. One of the biggest problems of the Old Testament Israel was their inability to keep their worship pure. Constantly had to wring it out of them, you know. Tell them to clean up their act. Because this is what drove them from Yahweh. The Apostle Paul, 1 Corinthians 10:6, says that their example is for us. Their example to keep pure is for us. You wonder why Yahweh goes into so much detail sometimes of the activities of Israel and you know, all these even minute things. Why? So that we'll learn from it and don't do it. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 6 says, now these things were our examples. He just got through talking about how, you know, Israel came out, Yahshua was the rock and followed and so forth. And he says, they were examples to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. He says, neither be you idolaters as some of them were. And then he says, verse 8, neither let us commit fornication as some of them and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Messiah. Neither murmur as some of them also murmured, complained. Nothing's going right. My life is a mess. All I do is face troubles. That's exactly what Israel did. He says, don't do it. Because they were destroyed of the destroyer. It ate them up. Now all of these things happened, verse 11, unto them for examples. And they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Who's that? I would say that that's us. The ends of the world are come. And we're right there entering into that time. So you tell me that Yahweh's laws and the Old Testament isn't important for today. Well, therefore, let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. That was one of their biggest problems. And now he says, don't you do the same thing. Yahweh doesn't accept compromise with any other belief system, let alone the practices that spring from them and from the darkness of rank heathen religion and superstition. Are you aware that Israel of old did exactly the same thing that churches today do concerning Halloween? Scripture plainly states that Israel joined themselves with pagan feasts on the border of Canaan. Israel saw this, or Isaiah, I should say, saw this as an abomination. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 19. He saw it as an abomination unto Yahweh, and he plainly warns them against it. They were doing the same thing. Oh, hey, can't be that bad. All our neighbors are doing it, and besides, it might be kind of fun. Isaiah 8, verse 19. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits and unto wizards that peep and that mutter, should not a people seek unto their Elohim for the living to the dead? To law and to the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. Oh, you're legalists. And as one brother said this week, well, I guess then they're illegalists. You're legalists. Bible says if they don't speak according to the law, there's no light in them. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 6. Let no man deceive you with vain words. Don't let them deceive you. But it's for the children. How can you deny them? Don't let them deceive you with vain words. Ephesians 5, verse 6. I want to read a couple verses here. And then we'll wrap this up. For because of these things comes the wrath of Elohim upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. Don't be partakers, partners. For you were sometimes darkness. You came out of that, just like Paul told the Galatians. You came out of it. Why are you returning to it? The weak and beggarly elements. But now are you light in the Master. Walk as children of light. Walk as children of light. Be a light to them. Show them the truth. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is the acceptable, what is acceptable unto Yahweh, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. So it's a shame. It's not edifying to anybody. It's an abomination. Well, I hope I've helped you refresh your understanding about this observance coming up and prepare you for the next time, the next chance you get when somebody says, are you ready? You know, we can't serve two masters. We can't. There's only one. No matter how someone wants to rationalize an observance, wants to draw us in, what it is at its core is really what it is. And no matter what's changed about it, what it began to be, and what is, you know, at the essence of it is really what the thing is itself. You can't change. A leopard can't change his spots. So if we understand the proof and the truth of what it is, then we know that this is something that Yahweh certainly finds abominable, and we should teach our children exactly that. May Yahweh bless you.